Broadly speaking, there are two ways to argue a case. One way is to marshal all your sources and your arguments, to put them in some kind of logical sequence, to arrange your words to the maximum pitch of eloquence and persuasiveness. The other way is to say that the other guy is a miserable, no good, unlearned, you can fill in the blank. And then it has less to do with your case than it does with the character or the arguments of the other guy. We will see, of course, both of these try, fail, succeed in the election season, as we have seen. But it is true, this general dichotomy, this split between the two ways that people argue what it is they believe in almost every argument. And because I have a case to make today, I am aware of the fact that it is very hard to fight against what the political consultants call going negative. And in fact, I'm going to start with the negative, but really so that I can build towards the positive. And because, as is inevitably the case, they are two sides of the same coin. Now, let's just say there was a party running in the United States that wanted to segregate men and women, not only in worship services, but on public conveyances, in public spaces, that wanted them never to be co-educational, that wanted to regulate how men and women marry and who may marry them, and asked for your vote. My suspicion is they wouldn't get it, even if you thought that other things that they stood for were admirable and helpful. That might be a deal breaker. And yet, there is just such a political force in the state of Israel, and my guess is that there are people in our community who support it. But they support it because the negative side of the platform doesn't affect them. So they will give money to ultra-Orthodox yeshivot institutions that lobby for just such laws in Israel, even though if they lobbied in Los Angeles, you'd be out picketing against them. And that's the negative side of this. There was, as you may know, a huge rally in New York that drew tens of thousands of Haredim, of ultra-Orthodox, against the internet. Now, I have a certain amount of sympathy for anybody who lobbies against the internet, as I suspect you do at certain moments in the day. But ultimately, the greatest complaint that is made against the internet is that it brings the world in. That's why they were lobbying against it, not because their cell phones go off on Shabbat, since that actually only happens here and not in the synagogues from which the attendees at the rally at which they pray. But that invasion of the world is, of course, part of what makes the internet, although infuriating, so magnificent and wonderful. Because you actually get on it and read about people who are unlike you and think unlike you and live unlike you and yet have something to say. And everybody here, I trust, I hope, I pray, thinks that's a good thing, not a bad thing. But there is a wave of fundamentalism that sweeps the Jewish world, and I know why. Other people may give you their theories, but I actually know the real reason why. And when I say it to you, you may not consider it an adequate explanation, but you'll realize that this must be so, not because I said it. And that is, it goes to the old Yiddish saying. There's an old Yiddish saying that says, Jews are like other people, only more so. Sort of surrealistic saying, but you get the idea. There is a worldwide wave of fundamentalism. There is fundamentalism in the Islamic world, fundamentalism in the Christian world. It would be in the Hindu world. It would be remarkable and astonishing if the only people that escaped it were the Jews. So there is a portion of our community. And if you walk through Bnei Brak or Mea Shearim, where the clock has stopped in the 18th and 19th century, you realize that there is something beautiful and wonderful and spiritual and mystical about that world, and it's deep in learning and filled with our tradition. But at the same time, there are things that rub very deeply against the grain of what I hope is your open, committed, pluralistic Jewish soul. And I've come here this morning to do something that I almost never do, which is to ask you to support an organization because you want it for yourself, so you should want it for our brothers and sisters in Israel, and that is the Masorati Foundation. That is the Foundation for Conservative Judaism in Israel. Why do I ask you to do that? First of all, you should know that this is not new. I got just a few statistics from my colleague and friend, Rabbi Alan Silverstein in Caldwell, New Jersey, who tells me that 63% in the latest poll of Israelis would support official recognition, government recognition of the conservative movement in Israel. It is not, by the way, recognized by the government, which means that it does not receive funding when, for example, the Orthodox movements do. That over 30% of Israelis have worshipped in a conservative or reform synagogue. That the number of kihilot, of congregations, is growing to over 60, with over 20,000 kids in the schools that teach Masorati Judaism as well. But all of that, the statistics, that's not the point, really. The point is that what you're doing right now, that is being in a service where men and women are sitting together, that only happens in Masorati and Reform congregations. Nowhere else. In other words, not in any of the congregations whose rabbis are officially recognized by the government. Now, that's not okay. It's one of the reasons why the consul generals of Israel, when they come to Los Angeles, join Sinai Temple and send their children to our school. Because the Israel that they represent is this open, pluralistic Israel that we wish to help create. It is very easy, I put in quotes, to fulminate, to be upset at the enemies of Israel, and to speak about the peace process or the question of the bombing of the nuclear bomb and Iran, because these are external enemies and it's always easier to point at someone else. But internal conflicts we know are more difficult because inside families, fights make us uncomfortable. And yet, our Israeli brothers and sisters deserve the same opportunity to worship the way you did this morning. Not only with men and women sitting together, but also with prayer books that have different, sometimes updated, sometimes new prayers, Sometimes, like the prayer we said this morning, the prayer for the state of Israel, which is not said in any of the ultra-Orthodox congregations because they don't pray for the state of Israel. It's important for us to help people like us. After all, if you believe, and I hope that you do, that Israel must be a Jewish state and must be a democratic pluralistic state, then you show it by supporting, and support here is a euphemism for supporting. You show it by supporting the people who believe that, not the people who fight against it. The people whose kehilot, whose congregations you would feel comfortable worshiping in when you go to Israel. Not as a curiosity to worship once, but if you lived there week after week, month after month, and year after year. That's who you should be helping. The Masorati movement is desperate for funds. Because people tend to give to people that they wouldn't actually be part of in terms of their community if they lived in Israel. But there are congregations just like you who need you and who need your help. And what they need most of all, and this is the crux of the argument, is they need you to feel a certain amount of spiritual self-esteem. Why do people give to Jews who are unlike themselves? Because they don't feel like they're really good Jews, so let's give the money to those people who are the good Jews and let them take care of good Judaism, and then I can continue to live the way I want. But it doesn't work that way. On Shavuot, we are told, when the Torah was given and the Israelites looked in it, you know what the Torah looked like? It looked like a mirror. It reflected all the different faces of the people who received it. And your Judaism is a real Judaism, an important Judaism, a Judaism that opens out to the world. If you live in a small, enclosed community, then how can you be an Or LaGoyim, a light to the nations, because they will never see you. They will never hear you. If, in fact, you have friends and relations with the non-Jewish community, if you go out and work in the world, if you go to secular universities and meet people, then you have an opportunity to take the values that you believe in and spread them to the world. The kind of state you want to see in Israel, a state that is characterized not only by Torah learning but by software startups, not only by advances in investigation, of parshanut, of explication of traditional texts, but also political theory and social theory and literature. That Judaism that is your Judaism is authentic and real and also starts at Sinai. I want to ask you to help the Masorati movement because I want to ask you to believe in yourself as a Jew. And to know that there are other people like you living in Israel whose children fight in the Israeli army, unlike others who do not fight in the army, who defend the land that we all claim to love, who read Torah on Saturday morning and go out to the borders to defend them on Sunday morning. And they need your help to continue to spread the message of Torah that speaks to the world, not just to one another. So please believe in the broader message of our people, that we really do have something to say, that you're here this morning because your existence as a Jew matters to the Jewish people. That you want to help our brothers and sisters in Israel who believe as you do. That you know as I do that the Torah didn't come down making everybody look the same. God is bigger than that, and the Jewish people are bigger than that. And we need all the colors of the Jewish rainbow. So, help them. Because if you lived in Israel, this would be you. Shabbat Shalom.